From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where a new report shows that people with developmental and intellectual disabilities in Massachusetts and around the country are more integrated into their communities than they've been in years past. Advocates say that there are still changes that need to happen, though. With us to break things down is GBH's Gabriella Emanuel. Hey, Gabriella.
Hi, Arun.
So give us the big takeaway from the report. What do we need to know?
So this report comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and it looks at 30 years of data and found basically enormous changes in both the home lives and the work lives of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The researchers, some of whom I should say are from here in Boston, found that 4 out of every 5 people nationwide who lived in an institution in 1987 moved to a community home by 2017. Those are big numbers, 4 out of every 5 people. Now, more than a dozen states, as part of this shift, no longer have any state-run institutions. That includes most of New England, as well as Alabama and Oklahoma. Yet, I should say, Massachusetts is not yet on that list. There are still 2 institutions open here.
So that's talking about their home lives. Does Massachusetts do any better when it comes to working in the community?
Yes, we do, actually. The Commonwealth stacks up far better when it comes to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities working in the community. Nationwide, the number is about 20% who work in the community, and in Massachusetts, that's more like 40% of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities working. Now, I should note there are huge variations between states. Some places like Washington State reach 85%, and Hawaii, it's less than 5. So, big variation. Here is John Butterworth, who is at UMass Boston and helped author the report.
I mean, that tells us that policy and strategy make a difference. And how states set funding and invest in training really matter in terms of the outcomes.
He says in the past 5 to 10 years, Massachusetts has really made a commitment to this and is already seeing changes in the outcomes.
Well, so tell us what this means for the people whose lives are changing.
I spoke with someone named Donna Jay, who's from Salem, and she was just 5 years old when her doctor told her parents that she needed to live in an institutional setting since he thought she would never be able to walk, talk, read. So she ended up living in a bunch of different institutions designed for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And over the years, she said she really did not like it. Here she is describing living at Hogan Regional Center in Danvers.
The place wasn't clean, no privacy in the bathroom. No privacy, no doors, no nothing. Everybody had a shower together, and I didn't like that.
She eventually moved to some group homes in the community, and now, at age 65, she's actually living in her own condo alone, and she says she's finally in a good place.
Wow. So really tremendous progress, like you're saying. But it sounds like you heard from people who think there's still things that need to be done.
Yes. I spoke to several experts who were not involved in the report, and they acknowledge, as you said, these enormous positive changes. But they also say the job has never been finished. First, they said there's more money needed and it needs to be spent better. Right now, the Commonwealth spends about $1 billion a year on community-based services for people with disability. But one person I spoke to at the Disability Law Center here in Massachusetts said too much money is spent on day programs that are actually isolated from society, and not enough is spent on things like job coaching in an integrated setting in the community. And then there's also another big fundamental thing. Anne Fratt, who's a self-advocate who was previously the chairperson of Massachusetts Advocates Standing Strong, she said just moving people into group homes, into the community, is not enough. When she lived in one, she said you had to move as a group, you couldn't attend the religious service of your choice, and that actually the community didn't really want them on their block.
We weren't of the community. And that's the whole thing. If you're not of the community, you're just in a group home in the community.
She'd like to see a focus on individualized opportunities for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and also a focus on helping the broader community really, truly welcome them.
Well, this is just fascinating and honestly kind of moving, taking stock of all of this. Gabriella, thanks for this.
Thank you.
That's GBH's Gabriella Emanuel. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. It was only a matter of time before we started reflecting the rest of our country, and coronavirus infection rates are now rising quickly in Massachusetts. The state's seven-day positive test rate is up to 1.18%, more than double where it was just 2 weeks ago. And a cluster of cases that began in Provincetown has Boston health officials asking any city resident who visited Provincetown this month or has plans to go to get tested. The Boston Public Health Commission says at least 35 cases in Boston residents have now been linked to the P-Town cluster, and most of these infections have occurred in people who were fully vaccinated. Boston Chief of Health and Human Services Marty Martinez says that's unexpected.
To have such a high number of folks, not only the Boston cases, but we know there's over 130 or so coming out of Provincetown, with also the majority being fully vaccinated. It is surprising.
Martinez says anyone who has been or will be in Provincetown this month should self-isolate for 5 days after getting back or until they get a negative COVID test. Over the past 2 weeks, Provincetown has had a positive test rate nearly 10 times the statewide average, according to government data. Yesterday, at least 6 more people died of COVID in the Commonwealth, along with 366 new confirmed cases, the highest number reported since late May. Dr. Davidson Hamer, an infectious diseases specialist at Boston Medical Center, says the highly contagious Delta variant may be to blame.
I'm increasingly concerned. Delta is much more contagious, and increasingly I'm hearing about Delta leading to a much higher viral load in the sort of nasopharynx, and that could facilitate transmission and lead to vaccine breakthroughs.
But Hamer notes that while cases are up, deaths and hospitalizations remain low, which he attributes to the state's high vaccination rate. Switching gears, new Boston police guidelines now in effect across the department are putting an emphasis on de-escalation. The new rules say officers should respond calmly and nonviolently to situations involving people dealing with a mental health crisis. The Boston Globe reports police must also apply more scrutiny when involuntarily hospitalizing people deemed a threat to themselves or others. Advocates say the tactics should help avoid unnecessary deaths caused by police. And finally, there's been a sharp divide in the weather so far this summer between northern and southern New England. The U.S. Drought Monitor says there are drought conditions in nearly all of Maine, along with northern Vermont and northern New Hampshire. But here in southern New England, there's been near-record rainfall. Leslie Ann Dupini-Giroux, Vermont's state climatologist, says the difference may be an effect of climate change.
Thinking about the variations that we're seeing, the variability in storm tracks, the availability in who got rainfall when and whether it's ongoing is part of the way that we understand how climate is changing.
The National Weather Service reports that here in Boston, we've had 9 1/3 inches of rain this month, 7 inches more than normal, and on track to almost certainly set a record. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo in news, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Here's another podcast you might enjoy, All Revved Up. Join hosts and reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price as they explore the intersection of faith, politics, and culture. New episodes of All Revved Up drop every other Wednesday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.